when you had to go get your coffee, I'd go get my readers because I realized, like, I need him to read the notes without having to strain. I mean, I can read them without it, but once you put a pair of these things on, you're fucked for the rest of your life. Like, two months ago, I only needed these for, like, to read, like, really small print, and now I got a monitor, you know, 18 inches from my face, and I needed to put them on. And I had perfect eyesight up until then, like, my whole life. Next thing I know, I'm going to get a cavity. You know, like, what the fuck's up with that?
You're going to need readers for your mouth.
Yeah. This is episode 259 of the Illustrious Gentleman podcast. That guy's Scott. I'm Ryan. We're comic book artists. We do a podcast. We usually drink.
Get sometimes, it?
Sometimes we drink. Today, once again, Scott's on deadline, so hence the coffee. Unless you're putting some whiskey in there, but I doubt you are. You're a pro.
It'd be a good play.
Yeah. And I got deadlines too, but mine are a little more flexible as far as I can avoid, you know, I can ignore my family this weekend and work all weekend. So I'm going to give me some me time right now with a Lakefront Brewing from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Pumpkin Imperial Ale. Ale brewed with pumpkin and spices with vanilla added and aged in brandy barrels.
That's a lot of shit.
Contains cinnamon, allspice, ginger, nutmeg, cloves, and mace.
Mace?
Mace.
Like, in your eyes, mace?
Like Hawkwoman's mace? I don't know.
Like Mace Windu?
I don't know. I didn't know mace was a spice, but I guess I do now. It is 10.7% alcohol ABV by volume. I'm not a big pumpkin guy, but every time I have, like, I used to hate, like, pumpkin pie and stuff, but now as I get older, I love it. So, and I love cinnamon. I mean,
yeah, I mean,
cinnamon's great.
Yeah. When I was 6, I hated pumpkin ales, but now, like, they're my jam.
Yeah. But only if they're aged in, brandy barrels.
Brandy barrels with vanilla added.
Yeah. I don't want any just weak ass 5% pumpkin ale. It's gotta be 10% or more. Or
oh else. Yeah.
I don't even care.
What are we even doing?
Okay. But yeah, I figure I was going to hold off on this, but I don't have anything else to drink except whiskey. And it is below 100 degrees and it is September. So it's like the fall equinox is like next week.
Yeah.
Autumnal equinox is what they call it.
Yeah,
it's about time pumpkin time.
Time to bust out the cardigans and
Can't wait.
Read next to the window.
My supporter sweater, you know, my supporter scarves. I got a U.S. men's national team supporter scarf. I got an Everton scarf. I got a Coyote scarf. I'm loaded on scarves, man.
This is scarf country.
It is scarf country. Speaking of scarf country and speaking of supporter scarves, another week has passed, and so another two episodes of Welcome to Wrexham has passed. And so I told you, like, the first two, not only are they different in tone than the rest of the series, they had a different theme song for the first two. So then three and four come, and they're totally different in tone and kind of the narrative they're telling the story through. And then five and six dropped this past week, and it's a completely different, I mean, at least they're keeping the theme song solid, but it's like a whole different, it's like they're trying to make every episode a different style of documentary show or something. It is weird. Episode five, you would hate it. It's just them doing skits about whales.
Yeah. As a content creator, I understand entertaining yourselves. To keep yourself motivated and interested.
Yeah, that must be what they're doing. Because episode five is essentially, and then maybe this has something to do with, maybe this was part of their deal with buying Wrexham. But episode five was essentially a fluffer video for whales in general. It's all about whales. Very little to do with the team they bought in Wales, and very little to do with football.
Just
the nation of whales. No,
okay, right. Not the animal.
No, you were thinking of sperm whales, but no, I'm talking about whales.
Well, you said fluffer.
You're right. I'm sorry. That was my fault. I shouldn't have.
You can understand how I'd be confused.
I could, yeah. So like they had like a woman on there who I guess is a famous singer from Wales. She sang. They did like a fake Sports Center segment. They did a fake like a late night segment. Very weird. And Rob McElhenney buzzed his head and shaved his beard, so he looks like. He looks Howard. like they're rebooting like American History X, and he's like going for the role of like Ed Norton. But I'm sure it has something to do with the current season of It's Always Sunny. But still, it was weird to see. And if you don't want Rob or Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds, you might want to skip episode 5 altogether. But then episode 6 goes
skip the rest of the series.
Episode 6 goes back to being like a regular kind of documentary. So I don't know. Right. I don't know what's happening. It's not, I haven't fallen in love with Wrexham the way I fell in love with Sunderland when the Sunderland documentary was on Netflix. So, I don't know, but I wish the people of Wales the best. I just don't know what they're doing here unless they're just circle jerking each other and FX gave them a platform for that.
Yeah. Well, their prince is now king. Does that mean anything for Wales?
I don't know. It means he could probably move out, though. Like, he probably doesn't have to live. I'm sure if you're the Prince of Wales, you have to spend your entire life within the boundaries of Wales, right?
They don't get anything. I don't know.
You think they should get, like, a consolation prize? Consolation prize.
There we go.
Yeah. One beer, Ryan, and it was like a terrible fluffer. Beer. Yeah. There you go. A new Welsh fluffer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What an awful language.
It's just weird. But I am jealous of the people that are so famous. They can just do whatever they want. And then with no repercussions, you know, they could fail at this. They could disappoint an entire country. They could disappoint all their fans. And he's still going to make $20 million for whatever next movie he plays himself in.
Yeah. I don't know. It could they really deliver anything more disappointing than any other potential owner of that club?
Well, before they bought it, their main sponsor was like a company that moved you, like furniture movers. And then now their main sponsor is like TikTok and Expedia and Aviation Gin and so right. The money's there. So it does seem like it'd be more disappointing than like if you're losing and you have no money, there's a reason for that. If you're losing and you have a bunch of money and famous owners, then it's ineptitude.
I mean, money's only one half of it, right? I mean, if you're a baller, you want to go where you're going to have television deals and sponsorship deals and you're going to win games. You're going to get more money going somewhere else even.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, we've used up all my interest in talking about Welcome to Wrexham at this point. Yeah. There's not a lot going on today. I did notice that some people are at a con in like a Comic-Con in Vegas. And then every year I never know what's coming up because I never see it promoted. And then every year when it happens, I'm pissed that I wasn't invited.
Is that Amazing Con?
Yeah. So there used to be one in Phoenix.
Dinosaur?
Yeah. And now there's one in Hawaii that I never get to go to. Well, I'm never invited to. I guess I could buy a table and then fly my ass to Hawaii, but why would I do that? And then there's one in Vegas, which seems like it's just right there. It's 3.5 hours away.
It is.
My wife would like to go there, not for the convention, but you know, for Vegas. But I could go there, play some sport, some sports bets. Yeah, for the shrimp cocktail, unlimited. Play some sports bets on sports teams while I'm there.
Ball. Yeah,
maybe make a little money. Seems fun. Again, a Vegas con in the summer. It's a little weird, but I guess you'd never have to step outside. Whatever
hotel it's at. Never been to Vegas in my adult life.
Really.
I was there when I was 13 or 14, maybe. to see. I don't know. I remember seeing escort ads on the top of taxis. That's the only thing I remember about Vegas.
Well, that part hasn't changed, thankfully. Yeah, I used to go there a lot. One of my best friends from high school used to live there, so I'd go there a couple times a year. But I don't like gambling, so I don't like going to the casinos. I like to just hang out with my friend who lives there. Maybe go to
Bill's.
Yeah, I go to like Fremont Street. You know, I go to old old casinos and shit. But
I would go to Zach Bagans Haunted Museum. That I would do. I'd be willing to throw away my money there.
Yeah. But if it's not haunted, then can you sue? Is it false advertising?
How do you prove that?
Good point.
But that would be something, though, wouldn't it?
Let's just call it Zach Bagans Museum.
To prove the existence of the afterlife in court.
Or to make Zach Bagans prove it. Yeah, you should make Zach Bagans prove it, and you should sue him.
Yeah, I just want to go see his Zoltar machine of himself.
You can make a wish like your Tom Hanks.
Get your fortune, bro.
Yeah, I just think it'd be fun to do a con in Vegas. I don't know.
Yeah, Vegas, sure, why not? Whatever.
The best part of Vegas is just walking around with an open container. That's why. That's the real reason.
Knights game.
Yeah, I want to fuck the Knights. But yeah. That's why I want to do a con in Vegas. Let's be real. I want to be able to just walk around all day with an open container and not get look. You know, you do it around here, people give you looks. You know, I got to hide it like in a koozie and stuff. It's all
there.
You know,
people give you looks if you don't have one.
That's right. I mean, why even be there? I would be a perfect guest for this show. I would be fully inebriated the entire time. And what more do you want out of a Comic-Con in Vegas? I mean, you got fucking Jimmy Hanna out there. He's not drinking all day at the show.
What a waste.
Yeah. Got to get me up in there for entertainment value. The news can come interview me after I've had like two bottles of wine like they did in Tucson. It's fun.
Some drunk dancing.
Yeah. You know, well, it depends on the kind of music, but yes, I would.
You would have a table.
Yeah, I just need a pole. Yeah, so that's all I got. What have you been doing this week? I haven't been doing anything. I've been working. I got my new work set up. I got my new at-home work set up, which I at first loved, and now I realize, oh, I can work anytime I want at home. So now I'm slacking more at the office and coming home and like but yeah, I've just been working almost every night, watching some soccer. You don't care about my MLS team, so I won't bore you with it.
American football?
Ugh.
The shit out of here.
Yeah, I'm not watching that. I'm talking about MLS, baby.
I know, it was a joke.
It's the same thing. Not the NAFL.
The No Fun League?
Did you watch the game last night? You said you were
going to. I watched a bit of it. I watched the fourth quarter, I guess. Justin Herbert's a baller, man.
Yeah, I think he got injured.
Did you watch any of that?
No, I saw SportsCenter this morning, and they were talking about him hurting something.
Yeah, he got thumped pretty good. He got up. He went out. He was stretching around. He was out for a play. He looked all right. Then he came in and immediately just looked like he should be anywhere else but on a football field. But he drove him down. Like he threw like a 50-yard pass immediately after that. He couldn't use one half of his body.
What did he have like a – I mean, how did he walk out there then?
Some rib injury. It's like he can't move his left arm, but fuck it. He throws with his right, so who cares? Right? That's what football guys do.
Yeah.
Just rub some dirt on it, pussy.
That's why they get paid so much, is because they could become brain damaged murderers like next year. So you better get paid now.
Yeah, or run for Senate.
No, I watched the real football, and I watched my Austin FC went against Red Bull New York the other night. It's fun.
I can't believe that's a thing.
Red Bull teams or Austin FC?
No, calling them Red Bull.
Oh, Red Bull owns lots of soccer teams around the world.
Yeah, it's just stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what's the, it's just a brand name. What's the difference between that and fucking?
I don't know. Whatever. Doesn't matter.
Have you been watching?
Ben and Jerry's New Hampshire FC or something.
Yeah, they're probably well funded. Probably got a good academy, youth academy there at B&J's NHFC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been watching anything? Listening to anything?
The youngest wanted to watch Ghost Rider last night because he hadn't seen it, so we turned that on. You remember a time when Mark Steven Johnson was the Marvel movie director? Holy shit, that was bad.
I prefer the second one that was made by the dudes who did Crank.
Right.
That is just fucking crazy. Is the second one
the whole thing on rollerblades?
Yeah. The second one is where he literally pisses fire, right?
With Idris Elba. Where there's something to it. Yeah. Is it leather jacket all like crispy and burnt all the time? And
yeah.
You know. Yeah. Yeah. It was. Ghost Rider, I think, just barely makes it into the so bad it's good category. Mark Steven Johnson's pretty good at that. And it's because of his sincerity. He's not trying to make a shit movie, but he can't help it.
Is it that bad? I don't know if I've ever seen the first. Is the first one that starts out with the horse, like the wild, like
yes.
Ghost Rider's been from around forever?
Yeah. Peter Fonda plays the devil. How embarrassing.
Does he play Mephisto or the devil?
He plays the devil. Just the devil. But of course, Mark Steven Johnson, also of Daredevil fame.
Yes.
Which is, again, oh, that might be better than this.
For its time.
Better and worse.
Daredevil wasn't terrible for its time. I mean, it did have that fight scene with Elektra that involved like teeter totters and shit, so that was problematic. But
I just can't believe how boring a Ghost Rider movie looks. Like,
no,
see, all of the action scenes, he locks down the camera and just leaves it in one place at like eye level and lets everything happen.
Oh, that's how I draw my comics. Just at eye level, no dynamic movement.
It's like the only movies he ever saw were the Star Wars prequels. He's just furiously taking notes.
Yeah, the second one, from what I've seen, looks fun just in the way that it looks like they're on meth the whole time. Everyone in that movie just looks like they're on meth, including like the dude filming it and, like you said, the rollerblades. Like, nothing in that movie. It's like the complete opposite. If the first one, everything's too stagnant, and the second one, nothing stops moving.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I've only seen it once, maybe, but I don't know. It's that tonal shift where I think it's sort of the same thing with that second Punisher movie where they're like, look, the first one, I guess, made enough money, but it was kind of shitty. So we have enough for a second one. Just do whatever the fuck.
Oh, you're talking about the Ray Stevenson Punisher
Warzone.
Warzone, that's right. Cool.
With McNulty.
That's right, as Jigsaw.
As Jigsaw, not from the Saw movies.
No, the original Jigsaw, not this fucking copycat. This Johnny come lately. How old's the youngest? Like 9, 10?
He's 9.
How did he feel?
I wanted to show him Logan.
Ooh, Logan's a good one.
Yeah, I ended up watching that after Ghost Rider.
What was his thoughts? Did it sustain his interest, or was he flopping around, fucking around?
He left 2/3 of the way through Ghost Rider.
I mean, he didn't even see the finale.
No. Ghost Rider wears a t-shirt in the movie, by the way.
Does it catch on fire?
No. He's a dude with a flaming head and just wears a t-shirt under his jacket.
Well, you see, Scott, it's probably made with unstable molecules.
Well, you see. So,
Reed Richards probably came to see him. It's my Bill Cosby. Reed Richards came to see him and gave him some unstable molecules.
Canceled.
Yeah. Now I want to watch those movies. I wonder if they're streaming. I don't want to watch the first one. I just want to watch the second one where he pees fire. The Spirit of Vengeance.
Oh, the first one we watched on Hulu, so I imagine the second one is there too.
All right. Do you want to get into some possible comic book talk?
Meh.
You didn't respond at all to any of my notes I threw down this morning.
I want to keep my takes fresh.
All right. Piping so I hot. Saw another quote. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm done.
Okay. See, when we used to record on two separate audio feeds, I used to cut myself out so that people could hear your zingers. But I can't do that now.
Mm. No.
No. So on Twitter, again, I saw one of these posts that people posts when they're looking for work. Yeah, when they're looking for like, oh, I'm looking for an artist for this. A lot of times it'll say like, I'm looking for someone recommend an artist to me that can draw horror real well. You know, I'm yeah. looking to hire to do a horror book or something like yeah. that. And that got me thinking, like, if you're a professional comic book artist, you should be able to, you could draw anything. Right. So, yeah. so they don't necessarily need someone who can draw horror real well. They just need someone who can draw real well. So that got me thinking about how people get associated with style or no, not with a style, but with a genre, right? Like,
yeah, sure.
If I told you what kind of comics does Ryan Ottley draw, you'd say
he draws Smash Mouth superhero books.
That's right. And if I said, what do you associate like Bernie Wrightson? What kind of books do you associate with Bernie Wrightson?
Romance.
There you go. So they got me thinking like it's not style, but it's genre. So would you rather, is there value in being the guy? Like you're the guy who draws vampire robots. Or do you want to be a guy who is just good and can draw anything? You know, and what are the benefits of either or one or the other? Like some dudes, you know, like Phil Hester or Mike Oeming, they've done crime books, they've done sci-fi books, they've done superhero books.
Right.
It'd be hard to pin those guys down. But yeah, like a Jim Lee.
Genreless.
Yeah. But like Jim Lee, I'm sure Jim Lee could draw a very good crime book. But when you think of Jim Lee, you think of. Yeah, well, like a real crime book. Like Capote in Kansas, he could have drawn that. Or whatever the Capote book is that Andy Parks wrote.
What was the fantasy book that he did?
Divine Right?
That's it.
That's still superheroes, though. Let's not kid ourselves. It's a superhero book.
All right.
It didn't have fucking hobbits and orcs and shit. It had Max Faraday.
Jesus, okay.
Turning into fucking, you know, Prince somebody. Prince Cole, I think. K-O-L. I think I got that down pat. That's the book that actually, that's the book that broke me on Jim Lee. I was all on board with Jim until like 10 issues into Divine Right. And I was like, I think I got to stop. Like, I think I'm done. You know?
Yeah,
I've got all the Jim Lee I need, and I have all the Jim Lee I love, and I'm good. You know, still one of my favorite superhero artists of all time, but I don't think I need anything past Divine Right number 12. Although I hear Hush is good, I've never even read Hush. That people seem to like that book. Didn't he draw that?
He did.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a run in Batman,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not a book.
Like I've never read that. I've never read the All-Star Batman and Robin stuff.
I did read some of that. That was weird. But that wasn't Jim's fault.
That wasn't Jim's fault. No. Yeah, so this is the thought I had. Like I once had a chat with Stelfreeze. I think I've talked about it on this show before. Well, he kind of said, like, you need to be the guy they think of when they think of X amount of books. Like, he looked at some Doc Unknown stuff I had, and he's like, okay, so you're the pulp superhero guy or the pulp adventure guy.
Ugh.
And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of
the... Shut your mouth.
It's kind of the... Yeah. I said, walk away, Mr. Stelfreeze. And then I was like, oh, I don't... Like, my first thing was like, oh, I don't want to be pigeonholed. And he's like, dudes who are pigeonholed get work. Huh?
That's the pigeon guy.
Yeah, but guys who are pigeonholed get work. If you want a scary, say you're an editor. This could be a fun game. Say you're an editor at DC and you're putting together.
Okay, I'm gonna say it.
You're putting together DC. A Batman horror book. Batman and vampires. Who are you getting to draw that book?
Vampire bats.
Especially in the 90s, who were you getting to draw that book?
In the 90s, who am I getting to draw Batman? You're getting Kelly Jones.
Yeah, right. So he's not the guy you get when you're doing a world's finest team up book with Superman, but he's the Batman artist you get when it's a horror tinged book. So that's kind of what Stelfreeze was saying, was like, be the guy that editors think of immediately when a book's pitched to them that fits, you know, ticks certain amount of boxes.
Yeah, I guess there's value in being genre guy, as long as the genre is so widely clamored for. Like, being the superhero guy, there's always going to be enough superhero books for you to do.
Right.
But once you get into crime and horror and fucking Western and all that shit, the pool of available work shrinks. So I suppose being the number one guy in those pools is fine.
Yeah, but you don't want to be the fifth best supernatural Western artist.
No.
Right. Or in my case, you don't want to be the 100th best.
Maybe doing Kickstarters for eternity.
Mythological adventure books.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where you do find yourself in Kickstarter territory, right? With every book, is if you're such a niche guy. Although some of those guys make a lot of money, so good for them. But so, yeah, I guess the pros of being a guy who's known for a thing is that if you're the best guy at it, you're always lining up work. You know, you've always got projects lined up for, because people want to work with you because they want to work in that genre. Like, it'd be interesting to talk to Charlie Adlard and see how hard it was for him to get more work in American comics after drawing 150 issues of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
You know, like if he's good enough to draw 150 issues of the best-selling comic book on the stands, I haven't seen him on, like, I haven't seen him do a run of, like, a Marvel book or a DC book, and that might be, he might not want to.
That's the advantage of having been the artist on the best-selling independent book for 150 issues.
You could take some time off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now they're just reselling them, but now they're colored, so you're getting double the royalties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shit's probably always going to be in print.
Yeah. But yeah, or like, I don't know. Do you think, so where do you land on, what are the benefits of it other than being the guy? Do you think there's other benefits to it, or do you think it's almost all negatives?
I personally, especially in my more current incarnation, I don't know the fuck. These days, I would find it a little suffocating to only be expected to do one particular thing. As I mature and ripen, ferment as an artist, I'm finding myself wanting to learn how to do new and different things. Not only like selfishly, just for me to be able to do it, but to remain relevant, to be able to grow beyond your pigeonhole. Yeah. So I say no, I would rather be able to do all the things than be the best at the one thing.
Yeah, it'd be tough though, because if you were like one of the better, like, quote unquote horror guys working right now, and you knew you could line up work for the next 18 months at a time, there's a comfort in that that makes work easier.
Yes.
That you don't get if you're jumping around from project to project. And I'm not talking about, like,
that's true.
I'm not talking about the guys who are the best of the best. Like, there's guys out there who they can pick and choose what genre and what project they want to work on. I'm talking about, like, you know, mid-level guys or lower level guys. You know, like I feel like there's guys who work on, like, the Transformers books who only draw Transformers comics. because it's such a specialized kind of look for those.
Yeah, there's
and I don't know if that's good or bad, if they like that or dislike that.
What's the word I'm looking for? Different people have different I don't know. Inclination is not the right word. There are people that are more gestural, and there are artists that are more sort of mechanical and structural. And so I get, you know, guys that like to do that shit, you know, like to draw cars and straight lines and I would go insane on a Transformers book. Seems like a nightmare.
It would probably be one of the worst projects to get. And even for me, if I got offered to color one of those books, it would probably be a nightmare. There's just so much going. Like you can't. I mean, I guess you could. If Chris Somney could draw a Transformers book, he could make that shit work. But most guys couldn't.
There's an expectation with that sort of stuff, all the mech and Transformers and that sort of stuff. I think a lot of the enjoyment for consumers of that is the engineering aspect of seeing the thing and seeing all the pieces and how they could realistically be put together. But if you're Chris Somney, who is not a detail guy, he's more a big picture form kind of guy, so he could rough out a Transformer and get it to be believable without going in there and drawing
right
every panel and all that shit. But that would drive me crazy, because I would want to do that, but I wouldn't be capable of it. I wouldn't have the patience for it, at least.
Yeah, I noticed myself now, like the some of the pages I'm working on lately, like there's a lot of stuff going on in like seven panels on the page. And I find myself zoomed in because I'm like, oh, there's so much storytelling that needs to happen. So I'm zoomed in, and then I have to stop myself and be like, no one's going to see like that finger or this, you know, it's going to be illegible for people at print size. So I understand. I would be the kind of guy too that's just like, oh, I got to make it tight. And then when you zoom out, it's going to look like garbage. On the other end of this, I just had a thought, not artists, but writers, like Larry Hama just turned in his last issue of G.I. Joe. He's written 300 issues of G.I. Joe. That's like 25 years worth of work if you're doing a monthly book. So maybe it's different if you're a writer as opposed to an artist. It's a good gig if you can get it. If you're the guy who's going to write G.I. Joe, you're always going to have a job writing, you know, G.I. Joe. I don't know where I would fall on that. I guess it depends on if the genre you got pigeonholed in you liked. Like when Brian Stelfreeze was telling me, like, oh, if you want to be the guy who draws noir superheroes or noir adventure books, you got to double down and be that guy. And then you got to step back and be like, do you want to be that guy? Do you want to draw 1940s serial heroes for the rest of your career?
It depends on what kind of artist you want to be too. Do you want to be somebody who can draw anything? I mean, a style or inclination in a particular genre is nice and it's natural, but you're also a production artist, so, you know, do you want to have the potential for work all the time? Well, then you're going to have to stretch yourself a little bit and do stuff you might not want to do. I don't know. Like,
but there's also,
I don't know how offended I would be if I were asked to draw like something else or somebody else. I don't think that much, because they're paying me to draw a thing.
Right. But there's also, so on the plus side of being like the guy, it's got to be nice to be like, again, Charlie Adlard's famous for drawing a zombie comic book. Well, I mean, not just any zombie comic book, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what he's famous for. That he will every convention he does for the rest of his life, he'll be the artist of that. Whereas if you're a guy who jumps around every 5-6 issues and does miniseries here, miniseries there, all these different genres, it's easy to not be thought of immediately when new projects come up. It's easy to not be thought of by the comic book readers kind of as like, oh, I know him. He does this. Mm-hmm. You just become another one of the guys who does everything. And again, that you could have a good career out of that. But maybe being the guy who does this, maybe if you were, you know, like Tony Fleeks drew, I don't know, 100 issues of fucking My Little Pony, and he got paid well to do that, and he's that guy now. And I think he's fine being that guy. Again, the money's good and that kind of stuff. But
yeah, and in that particular situation, there is a demand from the audience outside of the published work. Right. So he could do commissions on that forever.
Right. Yeah. So I think there's financial security. I think the financial security and the quote unquote fame you can get for being like that guy or the dude, like people don't think about Chris Claremont as a comic book writer. They think about Chris Claremont as the guy who wrote X-Men for 30 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah sure.
Yes. Yeah.
X-Men's a comic book. But.
I understand that, but they don't think about you know the what's the book he did at DC, the something seven?
Sovereign Seven
with Dwayne Turner. Yeah. They don't think about Sovereign Seven.
I saw him at a card show at Christown Mall.
Wow.
In fuck, I don't know, 95, 96, and I had several issues of Jim Lee X-Men for him to sign. And he was telling me how good Sovereign Seven was with Dwayne Turner. It's like, okay, that's nice. Can you sign these, please?
Yeah. So like, you don't think about anything. You don't think about Star Jammers. You don't think about anything else. When you think about Chris Claremont, you think about X-Men. When you think about, I don't know, Livio Ramadelli, you think about Transformers books or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's like, I think there's, for someone like me, speaking for myself, I was the only person I could speak for. Hmm. It would have been beneficial for me to, and maybe Stelfree saw that in my work. Maybe he saw that I was never going to be drawing Justice League.
He saw it in you.
He tried to steer me towards what would be best for me. But I think that would be best for me if I was the dude that every time someone came out with a golden age superhero idea, they reached out to me.
Do you want to do that? Do you enjoy drawing that?
Well, I mean, lately I don't enjoy drawing anything, but yeah, I think I do. I could have kept working on Doc Unknown for a long time. I could have, you know, I didn't reach a point in those 13 issues that I drew over. I kept having breaks. You know, it took like 4 years. It wasn't straight through. But I always felt like I could keep going back to that and enjoy it. Coloring, I really enjoyed the spoiler alert for whoever hasn't picked up Justice League versus Legion of Superheroes number 3. But I enjoyed the old Metropolis stuff. I enjoyed coloring those pages. Mm. Maybe the most out of almost anything in that book.
Were they sepia'd?
I put some sepia on them.
I apologize. I don't look at any of it.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, yeah, I'm so sorry. I love you, man. But I hate looking at my own stuff so much that I can't.
Well, when
after I send it in, I never look at it again. I don't look at any of the color proofs. I don't look at the print proofs. I don't look at my comps. Nothing.
That's fair. Yes, they were sepia'd.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So then the other benefit of being the guy who can do anything is you can move around. Again, I'm going to go back to Phil Hester. He's written superhero books. He's written non-superhero books. He's drawn superhero books, drawn non-superhero books. He's done everything. he'd be a good guy to ask this question of, you know, like, oh, would you have rather just been a guy who was known as this kind of guy, or do you want to be a guy who's known for everything?
Yeah.
And the advantage of that would just be variety is the spice of life, as I
am. Yeah, as an artist.
It's the mace of life.
Being able to successfully scratch whatever artistic itch you have, I think, is a blessing and probably something that 99% of working artists never get to do.
Yeah, is well, I'm going to save that question for later. But yeah, so if you not that I know you don't care because you just wouldn't care, but it irks that's me a little bit when it irks me a little bit what when I see a post when I see a post saying like, oh, I'm looking for someone to draw a queer lesbian vampire book. I feel like they don't want someone like me to apply for that job, you know? And I get that if they're looking for representation, if they want an artist who has representation in that field, then that's fine. But if they just think that there's some people who can't draw that book, it's just short-sighted on their end. It's almost borderline offensive that they think that a good comic artist can't draw any book.
Yes.
Again, yes. Unless they're seeking active representation. If they want a queer artist, that's one.
Sure. Thing. And I mean, if I were looking for work and I were interested in it, I would still submit stuff and let them, you know, pass or decline or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We're like invisible creators because you don't see the person. You don't particularly need to know anything about the person,
right? But
it would be different if EVS were drawing that book, you know.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't think that somebody who's outwardly, you know, an ally it would be a problem if,
you know. Right. I'm not talking about if
you. No, I understand.
I'm talking about it seems like a lot of people think you have to hire someone who fits that specific super specific genre. You have to find an artist who's worked in that genre before rather than, sure. you know, like no, I've gotten emails before and they're like, oh, do you think you could draw a horror book? And I'm like think like Mignola, like, he draws supernatural. Yeah. He draws supernatural, whatever. But Mignola, one of my favorite superhero books is a Mike Mignola issue of X-Force. Like it's weird that they think you have to have it's weird that some people think there are levels of expertise like in genre, I guess. Like
that's not wrong. When I did the Dracula book at Boom, I saw a fair amount of shit online saying that I wasn't capable of doing it.
Boy, were they right.
Yeah. And honestly, they were. I wasn't. But there's a lot of factors that go into that, right? It's interest in it. It's interest in the subject, interest in putting in the work. I think it would be different now. You know, right. If I had done it, I would. I don't know. You build up a library of so much stuff over time that you kind of know how things work. And if you consume enough of it, you kind of know how the pieces are put together and you can approximate it.
Yeah. And I mean, you have, it's funny. I never thought of the Dracula book as a horror book. Like it just doesn't strike me as a horror book, probably because he's wearing a suit half the time. But your other horror book you did at Vertigo, Dark and Bloody, you really dived into the horror on that. There's monsters in it. There's much more blood and, shadows and splatter. And I don't know, maybe you felt more agency. Maybe you felt more in control of your craft at that point.
Oh, I felt a better page rate is what I felt.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, for me, just to kind of wrap up this terrible topic we're talking about that I didn't have any notes for really. I don't know. I've struggled for so long and I still struggle with lining up work that I think if I could be the dude who just had like golden age superheroes lined up for the next 5 years, I think I'd be perfectly pleased with that.
Yeah. It's just the, I don't know, the number of those projects existing because the audience just isn't there.
Right. Well, plus the page rate would have to be there. I couldn't kickstart every right. 6 months for the next 5 years. That would just drive me nuts.
Oh my God.
Yeah. What a nightmare. So I think I fall under the guy who like, I would want to be considered for everything. Like coming off the book we just did where I colored you on a massive superhero book. I would like to do like a horror book next, or I would like to do a crime book next, just to get away from glowy shit and bright colors and get back to kind of like what I did on Family Tree. So I like being able to float around. And again, as a colorist, very few color mid-level, I guess just like any other artist, mid-level colorists are pretty interchangeable. There's the John Layman out there could really just pick out a hand, like one or two colorists, I think, based on they could see something and know who colored it. The rest of us, we all fall into like a giant, cesspool of coloring abilities. So I don't mind swimming around that cesspool and doing a crime book and doing a sci-fi book and all that stuff. Like I don't, that's fine. I'm good with that. I do want to distinguish myself and make myself stand out from the rest, but that's secondary to having consistent work.
Yeah. Yeah. There's,
okay, that might be a different discussion.
Yeah, that prompts a couple of points in my head. After coming off of 6 issues of Justice League versus Legion, it's been kind of nice in the last couple of weeks here to kind of just float around on different things. And I inked another DC artist for the first time, which was educational and taught me a lot about maybe even like I would say what's permitted in the superhero book. It's like it not having to be so, I don't know, stereotypically superhero all the time.
Yeah, I've seen what you're inking and it's pushing the cartooning to another, even more than like a John Timms or somebody like that. It's really pushing the cartooning.
Yeah. So bouncing around a little bit and sort of just being able to do this here and that there without the expectation of having to sustain that for several months is kind of hitting the spot right now for me.
Right.
And also, I've been sort of inwardly questioning what I can do to be more me. If that makes sense, it's like, I don't know. Speaking as artists, as us, we can look at the vast majority of things and just based on a panel or a page, being able to pick out who that is, you know, without seeing a credit. Oh, that's so-and-so because we know, I guess it's the identity of how other people work. You know, that's a Dan Mora shoulder, or it's a whatever Ryan Otley right. knuckle, you know, it's, that's one of my favorite moves.
The Ryan Ottley knuckle.
The Ryan Ottley knuckle.
Yeah, when you
I finished with that one.
Yeah, when you pull it out without when you do it without any warning or notice, it can really sell the whole experience.
But I know I don't see that of myself, you know, and I probably nobody does. But, you know, I saw Shannon several years ago and he's like, oh, I was bumping around the DC office and I saw a page laying around and I was like, oh, that's a Scott page. It's like that was the first time it really clicked with me that I have a look. So I want my look to be more unique. I guess that might be another episode. I don't know what more I have to say about that, but I want, you know, to have my thing. I want my own Ottley knuckle, you know, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm a fan of the Godlewski knuckle myself. I've only had it a couple times, but it's noticeable.
It's the push and the twist at the end.
That's right. Especially if you do it upside down. So I mentioned that I would like to do a crime book, or just something, you know, I think I've told you, like, just something set in like proper Gotham, like something that you can put atmosphere and mood, you know, a page can drip with mood. That's kind of the work I'm looking to jump on next. What is there a genre that you're really, that you'd like to work in that you haven't, or is there something, you know, a type of book you would like to do like for your next like 6-issue run on something? Is there anything in the back of your head that you want to do, like fantasy, sci-fi, horror,
romance? I haven't done a proper fantasy book. I've done sci-fi and superhero and horror and pseudo western, so yeah, sure. I guess I would try it. I fucking hate horses. But it's only because I haven't drawn them, because they're hard.
Mm-hmm.
I really need to just learn how to draw shit. I think about that all the time. It's like, oh, maybe every morning I should take 15 minutes and just grab an image off the internet and just draw it and really figure out how fucking ankle looks, you know?
Yeah, like I think one of the characters I'm drawing in the book I'm currently drawing is originally started out with like hooved, like goat legs and like kind of hooved feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stopped drawing the character like from the knee down. Like it's just, I can't wrap my head around.
It's the mechanics.
Yeah, that kind of reverse ankle thing going on, or like a reverse shin. It's like an extra joint and like a, that type of foot, like I can't, my brain will not fucking work that way. Like I just can't do it. And then like, if you do draw something on model, like today I had to draw just the silhouette of a skeleton. And when I was done with it, I'm like, that looks terrible, but it looks like the reference I'm looking at, like a skeleton and a skull. I hate to piss on all of our death metal fans and shit like that, but a skull looks dumb and a skeleton looks dumber. Like there's nothing cool about any of that shit.
Spoiler alert. It's it's like we talk about all the time. It's part of learning the rules that you can break them, you know how a skull is put together. And so you can, you can do it the way you want to do it without, you know, betraying the identity of the thing that it is.
That's a good point. Good point. You know? All right. Yeah. So to wrap it up, I want to be the guy who jumps around, but I want to have the backlog of scheduled work as a guy who's known for a thing.
Yeah. You want to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, man, I swear to God, if someone just came to me and said, hey, you're going to be the regular colorist on this book.
Because why like would you have rolls, a cake you didn't eat?
I'm a pie guy. If someone came up to me and they're like, hey, we're going to do another, like a book similar to 100 Bullets. It's going to run for 67 issues, and it's going to be a consistent art team throughout the run. and it's work for the next 5.5 years.
Right.
I would be like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, I that would be a dream gig to just every day, day in and day out, for the next 5 years of my life, know what I'm doing, get paid on a regular basis, not have to worry about work. And I've been lucky the last year. I haven't really had to worry about work, but we're now we're coming up on the end of the year, and starting in January, I might not have any work lined up. So I'm back to that bullshit again. Whereas if I was the dude who drew fucking, I don't know, fucking a Minions comic or whatever, which would be a nightmare, but probably get paid. Probably get a lot of fucking money doing commissions of Minions.
Yeah, those Minion stands.
Yeah, people love those motherfuckers. All right, do you have any recs? Have you, anything you want to recommend?
No, I don't think so. I guess I would recommend Ghost Rider.
So bad it's good.
Yeah. It's very funny.
Speaking of dipshits with skulls. But I guess if it's flaming, it's kind of cool.
I'm supposed to believe that what's his fucking face? Nicolas Cage and Eva Mendes are the same age. Are you kidding me?
You gotta moisturize. That's how you look young.
She just likes how loose the skin on his face is.
Speaking of Eva Mendes, wasn't she in one of the Elmore Leonard adaptations? Wasn't she? I know Jennifer Lopez was in Out of Sight, but wasn't Eva Mendes in Justified for an episode or two?
No.
Or that's Carla Gugino was.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my rec is the Elmore Leonard Raylan audiobooks. So I noticed on the library app I use, there's not a lot of selection of audiobooks I give a shit about. But there are like 4 or 5 Raylan novels, you know, Elmore Leonard books that focus on Raylan. And they're pretty good. He started writing them because he only wrote a short story, and then they optioned that short story. And then he wrote a bunch of shit after that. So like the second or third Raylan novel is a lot of season 2 of Justified. But they're fun. They're fun.
The best season.
Yeah, the guy who reads them is great, except the first one. The first one's called Pronto, and the guy who reads the first one, his voice for Rayland is like a hillbilly, and it's the opposite of what you think about fucking space cowboy, you know, handsome devil elephant. It makes him look like a hayseed who just like, oh my gosh. You know, let's go, gotta go capture this guy down in Florida. Like, he talks like that. Whereas the second audiobook reader for the rest of the series really nails it, and it's great. So avoid Pronto, but then go ahead and get the other ones. They're fun. And in your head, you can just think about Timothy Oliphant all day long.
Well, that's what I do anyway.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's what I recommend. And I just recommend the Hoopla app in general. Free content for your phone. All you need is a library card.
That's it.
That's it.
Which means what? You need a home address and a utility bill?
I don't know how that works. Probably. You probably need proof that you live in the area to get one.
I don't know. Discriminatory to me.
Yeah, we all know you live in a tent, and that's just a green screen behind you. All right. Well, I'm going to let you get back to work because I know you have something to do in a couple hours. Good luck with that. I'm supposed to color 3 pages. Guess what I don't want to do right now? But that's okay. I'm living my best life. My Lakefront Brewery Barrel Aged Pumpkin Imperial Best Life with Mace. It's not an ale. It's too heavy for an ale, and it's not quite a stout. And so I don't know what to do with it. It's too thick to be a easy drinking ale.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm going to give it a 3. again, it's not strong enough to gain higher, but I am a fan of cinnamon and allspice.
Allspice. That's in the Transformers Dune crossover. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's also the it's also the secret ingredient to all Asian food made on Chopped. Gotta get some. Oh, that's five spice. Sorry. Gotta get some Chinese five spice up in this bitch, and then they'll love it. Yeah, so I'm gonna give it a 3. It's fine. I don't know. I wouldn't mind going. I hope that Lakefront Brewery has a Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee. That'd be cool.
I would assume so.
But you don't want to sit out in the lakefront and drink a 10.5% pumpkin imperial ale. You know, lakefront beer is, you know, you want something a little lighter. You want to go all day in front of the lake. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You don't want to have one or two and have to go take a nap in your Airbnb. Kill the rest of your vacation.
Oh, that's what hammocks are for.
Yeah, you got to go light on vacation, though. You go heavy at home, light on vacation. That's what I tell my kids. Telling them since they were babies. You go hard at home, light on vacation.
I just want to watch Sesame Street, Daddy.
Nope, we got this thing of black tar here, and we got to use it up, because when we're on vacation, it's just marijuana. All right, Scott, send us home so I can decide what I'm going to do next.
All right, go do that. Bye.
Bye.